This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You're listening to
First Time
Dads.
With me, Richard Innes.
And me, Steve Meyer.
Toddlers and TV. Does my toddler watch too much TV? Every single parent in the world has probably asked themselves this question at some point. So who better to give us an answer than a man who fronts a lot of the TV shows your toddler watches?
Nigel Clark is a well-known TV presenter who fronts the CBeebies Baby Club. I was also presenting this weekend's CBeebies Prom. He came into the studio to talk to us about the decisions that they make when they're making TV shows for kids. Nigel, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me here.
You're very, very welcome. I am very excited as a person who watches a lot of CBeebies. I'm a man who's I'm nearly 40 years old, and yet I watch a lot of children's television.
You've been immersed in it again.
as do many parents of toddlers. So as you know, Steve and I have many, many times on the podcast with many guests on many different subjects. We always do seem to come back to the issue of screen time.
Yep.
So it's very, very exciting to have somebody here who has been, you know, on the screen, as it were, and actually presenting these things to our children.
Yeah. We've got a little bit of experience in that. I've been doing it, nearly 20 years now.
Nearly 20 years?
Yeah.
I should also point out this is an audio medium, of course, but you do not look old enough. I mean, this is a weird thing to say, but you do not look nearly old enough to be someone who's been presenting TV for 20 years.
A lot of people think I'm about 20, mid-20s.
I would say so. Yeah, you look about 25.
Age. Yeah, I'm 41.
I mean, for God's sake.
Same age as me. I wish I looked like that.
I should point out here that, yes, Nigel is actually older than I am, and yet I look old. I look like I could be your dad.
You do. Well, I'm not going to lie. You do look a little bit older.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Charming. Yeah.
I think it's the beard.
You're very
it's
welcome.
The beard.
It's the beard and the baldness. It's not a great combination. Yeah. Ho-hum.
But it means that we're all on the same generation in terms of the kids' TV that we watch.
Yeah, definitely.
So we can talk about how that's changed to now.
Yeah, completely. Because I think...
What kids' TV do you remember, Rich?
God, what kids do? Oh, blimey! You've really put them on a spot.
Grange Hill.
Yeah, a lot of the classics. Rainbow, Zippy and Bungle.
Yeah, Play School.
Blue Peter.
Play School was Floella Benjamin, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
and the Round Window, Big Ted.
Was that Brian Kent? Was he? He's a fella that.
Yeah. You might be right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was those were the days.
My memories are blurry though, but yeah, I do remember the coming home from school thing. You know, the sort of 3:30 sitting down and the broom cupboard, Philip Schofield and Gordon
that's
the Gopher.
That was kind of boring.
Gordon the Butler or Wilson the Butler, whatever it was.
Yeah. Wilson the Butler.
Yeah.
Gordon the Gopher.
Yeah, that's right.
Ed the Duck.
Yeah.
When you actually just say these words out loud,
Roland
it does all
Rat.
Sound completely
Roland
mental.
Saturday.
Roland Rat. I used to have Roland Rat glasses.
That was in the mornings, wasn't
as,
it?
As a spectacles wearer, I used to have these special, when I was about 8 or 9, I used to have these Roland Rat glasses. I remember that.
But I don't recall anything for babies.
This program, The Baby Club, that we do, is the first program that's aimed at both parents and very young children.
Okay.
So how do you aim a TV program at? Because I say this, you know, obviously I have a 2-year-old and a 6-week-old.
Yeah.
So is the idea with The Baby Club that my 6-week-old son could possibly be engaged with it in some way?
Theoretically, yes. I mean, we say that it's from 6 months to 18 months. That's what we say on paper.
Right.
But if you look on social media, you've got people younger than that are fully engaged in it. And you've got people all the way up to 4 and 5 fully engaged in it as well. Okay. But then we're also speaking to the parents because the idea is that you get involved in the program at home. Mm-hmm. So we want you to sit with your child and join in with what we do.
Like the baby classes that you take your kids
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So just like the ones you'd go to at your local town hall or at your local leisure centre, wherever they're taking part, we want you to do that with us on the television.
So, you know, this comes back to something, again, as I said, that we talk about a lot. It's the idea that screen time is often kind of suggested it's, you know, it's just purely negative. People focus on the negatives. And I realise that, of course, there are negatives, because if you're someone who plunks your kid in front of the TV for 2 hours and goes off and sits in the back garden, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you're somebody who is sat with kid on lap and you're talking and you're engaging with something, that's something different. I sometimes feel that's forgotten.
Yeah, this is it. It's such a huge topic, this screen time topic. And yes, some of it is exactly right. You shouldn't be leaving your kid in front of a screen, not knowing what they're watching for hours on end, so that you can do your cooking or your cleaning or text your mate on your phone. It's about being vigilant. It's about knowing what your kids are watching. It's about monitoring how much they're watching. At the end of the day, I'm quite a believer that they shouldn't be left to do what they want to do. We have to guide them.
We're
the parents, and we have to guide them.
We make the decisions for them until such time they're able to make their own decisions.
Exactly.
Based on what they've seen around them as being good decisions to make.
Yeah.
And they trust you to do that. That's the nature of being a small child, right? They trust mummy and daddy to know what's right for them.
Well, exactly. You know, if you said to Jackson, what do you want for my son? What do you want for dinner? He would probably suggest something based on what he's had previously.
Exactly, of course.
And if you just gave him chocolate ice cream every day,
he'd eat chocolate ice cream every
day. He's going to have chocolate ice cream, isn't he?
He's going to think that's dinner right there.
So no, I want to cut straight to it here, right? So on CBeebies, as somebody, as I say, my son watches a lot of CBeebies, probably more than I'd like.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I have that same thing as everybody
else. You're
safe
with CBeebies, by the way.
This is what I'm going to say, you see, because my whole thing, I'm constantly like on edge almost. Oh my God, he's watching too much TV. When it comes to, as somebody who's there, you know, you're there on the production end, you're there, you see how the shows are put together. Obviously, so many people think, oh God, my kid's watching TV, this is awful. Specifically, I suppose, from your experience with CBeebies, what sort of checks and balances are there in terms of, right, we can put this out, we can't put this out, the educational value, what do you have to go through in order?
BBC compliance.
Exactly, well, what is the compliance you have to go through?
It's not even BBC compliance, it's CBeebies compliance.
Oh, blimey.
Because you're aiming programs at children that are so young. So let's take a show like The Baby Club. I think that was the dream child of a couple of people about 2.5, 3 years ago. So it's taken that long for it to get to screen. So first you'll pitch it to the BBC and they'll say yes or no. There's this has got legs or it hasn't got legs. Then you'll have to, if you get through that stage, then you have to keep presenting like what the program is going to be like, what the different sections are going to be like, what is the aim of that section. You know, the program has to be analyzed by people who say, okay, yeah, we can support that. We will give you the money to actually make this.
Because there's a BBC charter. And there are things that in order for the BBC to get public money, they have to be fulfilling certain public service requirements about education, information, that kind of stuff.
Of course. So
in a way that the other TV channels don't have the same pressure on them.
Exactly. So they'll be wanting to make, let's say, programs that get children involved in art, or they'll be wanting to make programs that educate young children about numbers and numeracy, or about language. So there are lots of boxes that they want to tick in their sort of broad scope of programming.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always looking at this. They're having focus groups that they'll find out whether people are enjoying these programs, what they need more of, what they need help with. So there's a lot that goes into it before we actually get to the stage of like, okay, we're going to make a program about baby clubs.
Are there sort of educators involved in that? You know, people involved in the world of education who the BBC will use to say, you know, does this tick this box or that box?
So with the baby club, I can speak from this one because it's been so relevant recently. We had two groups. We had the Foundation Years Trust and People, which is a charity. And both of them are involved in early years education and learning. And they were like advisors on the program. So anything that we suggested, anything that we did on the program, even down to anything that got filmed and then was in the edit, would go to these people and they'd say, the language on that was not quite right. Let's change the wording on that. They were on set watching us do it. So, you know, sometimes I'd do a take and it'd be like, no, Nigel, let's redo that because the wording you use could suggest this and we don't want that. So let's redo it.
Because you have got that responsibility because you are the only one doing that stuff. It's not like when I was off on doing share parental leave for 3 months and I was taking my son and then my daughter around to the different classes, there is quite a broad range of competency, shall we say.
Yeah, definitely.
Between the different groups. And you get to know the good ones, and the good ones are the ones that, you know, sell out,
yeah,
you know, weeks in advance. And you get to know the ones that are just some fella with a guitar,
yeah, yeah,
where there's too many kids and, you know.
We've all been there.
It's,
yeah,
you know, it's a fiver, yeah, cash in hand above a pup.
Yeah, really? Of course. I mean, before I'd actually sat down and filmed, I went on a small course with Peep, the charity, and they educated me on the do's and don'ts of baby groups and what we're looking for and what we're trying to achieve. And then during the filming, I sort of got into it so much that I went onwards and did a full-on Peep practitioner course. So I'm like, yeah, a qualified Peep practitioner. I can actually hold a baby group.
Right, that's impressive. Do you know, because obviously, I suppose this is a bit of a special circumstance because your show is aimed at very, very small children.
Yeah.
Do you know that for, you know, say that's like the shows that are aimed at 4 or 5 year olds, is there a similar process there, yeah, for those, yeah, slightly older kids as well?
When it's CBBC, they're always going through those kind of things. So if you take it... for the older kids, there might be dramas that get put on that tackle issues that kids will be having. So say your parents are split up, you know, they'll put on a drama that deals with this. And before they make it, they're analysing and looking at what needs to be covered, what are kids scared of, what are kids having apprehensions, yeah, about. Yeah, yeah. All of those things get thought about before the programmes are made.
We've, just a slight tangent, we go to the library quite a lot with our kids, and because it's obviously books can be expensive, and you know, he can take like 15 books at a time. And I've noticed, because you're not just going down the path of the Waterstones, you know, children's book section, yeah, Jackson's often pick up books, and it's only when you get them home and you read them, you go, blimey, this is a book about loss.
Yeah,
you know, this is a boy whose dog's died, yeah, and it's quite, you know, and it's, you think, oh well, there's, you know, people are creating this kind of content. Or you know, discipline, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's the same, I guess it's the same sort of thing, but with the TV.
Yeah, all the issues and things that children might bump into growing up, we want to give them the tools to deal with that. We want them to be able to say, oh, I've read a bit about this, or I've heard about this before, or I've seen this, so that they don't feel alienated, so that they feel like, oh, this is part of life. Mm. I know about this. I can deal with it. I can.
I'm curious because we started off talking about, you know, reminiscing about the stuff we watched as kids, and I'm curious as whether
were they teaching us?
Well, exactly. Yeah, that, you know, because I can see, you know, from watching TV with Ben, or you know, from what you've just described there in terms of the processes you guys have to go through, that there seems to be a lot more focus on what we're telling kids than perhaps there was in the TV shows we watched as kids, and maybe we're applying the kind of the judgments we make on screen time, maybe we're applying on the basis of the quality of the programming we had as kids,
well, yeah,
versus the quality of the programming that they have now.
Yeah, I remember watching like stuff like Rainbow, and there was definitely some sort of, like, there was a sort of bullying theme, being nice, being kind, that was running through the characters there.
Yeah.
You know, Bungle, George and Zippy.
Yeah,
know, there,
yeah,
was definitely,
course,
a dynamic there which was trying to...
Yeah, I think it's programs like that were the innovators. They were that was what opened the door. It was like, yes, you're having fun, but their kids are learning something. Play school. You know, you'd go through the round window to see someone milking a cow or something. I'm trying to remember, yeah, what we used to watch.
I really can't remember.
Yeah,
and but we used to go through the window to learn something.
Yeah, yeah. And the Blue Peter stuff, where they would have their, you know, appeal with the kind of the thing that went up, you know, every time the
they were raising
money, yeah, it would open your eyes to
something,
someone in a less advantaged position, yeah, and you know, go to school and you'd raise money and do that kind of stuff. Why is it that it's just the BBC that's doing this?
Nowadays, yes, in this country, it's mainly the BBC. You do get some offshoots. You got True Tube. They're doing some quite good things, but. Trying to think how long ago it was, maybe 12 or 15 years ago, in the UK you weren't allowed to advertise fast foods anymore. before you could advertise all your brands, or, you know, the burgers that you might sometimes have bumped into.
burgers are available at multiple retailers,
that you might have bumped into. You're not allowed to advertise those to kids anymore. You've got if you're going to advertise food to kids or anything like that, it's got to be healthy. It's got to be along those lines. So a lot of the UK industry that were making programs didn't have the money anymore.
Because so it just disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the difference, isn't it, between the BBC and the commercial channels. They haven't got the money pressure. Well, yeah. Got a different kind of money pressure, but they haven't got to hit the figures in order to justify the
program. If you were on one of the commercial channels, you could go to a toy, well, to a food brand or whatever, and get X amount of money and say, right, well, this is loads. We can definitely make a show with this. Now you're hunting for someone to advertise on one of these commercial channels. That's why nowadays you might pop up and see a life insurance one on a kids channel and you're like,
we should probably point out here, if you are working in the commercial advertising industry and you're interested in the podcast First Time Dads, we have extremely low costs.
Come see me.
Yeah, we've got very low production costs. We're open to any commercial opportunities.
Send me an email.
Send Rich an email.
So are we saying then that basically the BBC are the only creators of original programming for young kids?
I wouldn't say only, but I would say biggest. In this country, I'd say they probably have a... This is just off the top of my head. Maybe 80% of...
Because, for instance, my son will watch, you know, we might, like just this morning before I dropped him off at nursery, just to keep him on a bloody even keel, frankly.
Yeah.
We watched sort of 15 minutes of Milkshake, right, on Channel 5. That often goes on just because we used to put it on because Pepper was on there, right?
Yeah, yeah. But this is it, right?
But that's so, not... So that's not their show. Like Fireman Sam's not their show.
Exactly. It's been made by someone else. It's like the other one. So say, I'm going to mention all of them so that we're not representing.
We're not picking on anyone.
So Disney, they'll be showing stuff that's made in America. Nickelodeon, showing stuff that's made in America. Cartoon Network, showing stuff that's made elsewhere. And they're bringing it over here so that we can have content.
Mm.
They don't make much here that goes out for
us. And then presumably that means that those shows haven't been subject to the same checks and balances you were talking about for the BBC. I feel like we're turning this into an advert for CBeebies, which wasn't the idea. But it's interesting that's the case, then, right? So you don't know kind of the quality control behind it.
Why CBBC and CBeebies have won BAFTAs so many times in the last 10, 15 years, because they make them in a different way.
And they're trusted.
Yeah.
Because it's the BBC, there's an element of trust that you have in the corporation because it is the BBC.
Because there's scrutiny. As soon as you do something wrong on CBeebies or CBBC, that's going to be in the paper and people are going to be saying, I'm paying my license money for this. What are you doing?
Which is a thing hovering over every BBC employee ever, right?
Exactly.
I'm paying my license fee. How dare you?
Now, you might be able to answer this question, Nigel. I remember a friend of mine has got a 16-year-old son. When he was quite young and started watching cartoons, I was around their house and he was watching cartoons and mum came into the lounge and said, no, you know, you're not allowed to watch that channel. And I was like, why? Because the type of animation being shown on that particular channel was a certain type of rapid flashing animation, which has been shown in some studies to cause adverse brain activity in kids.
Right.
Have you come across that before? Does that mean any
No, I haven't really come across that, but then... If you just look at epilepsy and how you have to give a warning for flashing
Sounds
images,
it's
animation has come a long way and there are so many different styles out there now that, you're going to have stuff flashing up on screen. So I can definitely see how that would be something you'd be concerned about.
Interesting. This has changed my view a little bit, actually, in terms of we may now watch more CBeebies than anything else. I mean, I do stand by that thing. I veer between, and we've talked about this again before on the podcast, but I do veer from day to day on the, my God, my son watches too much TV, to the, there's nothing wrong with him watching TV. And I go back and forth. I mean, you've got two boys. Is it two boys you said?
I've got a boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl, sorry. 11 and 9 years old now.
Yeah.
So as somebody who was involved in kids' TV, when your kids were growing up, how did you feel in terms of that? What's the limit, you know, where, how much TV would they watch, for instance?
For me, it's more about knowing the programs they're watching. My son has learned, and my daughter, they've both learned amazing things from the TV. I mean, literally yesterday my son came to me and he said, oh, if he's a gymnast, he does loads of gymnastics and stuff. Because if the gymnastics doesn't work and then the second option's if I want to be a chef, if that doesn't work, I've been watching this program, Dad, all about glass blowing on Netflix, and it's amazing. And,
I've heard about this.
I've heard about it. It's like the art form is like, it's like slowly being forgotten, and you know, you're not going to have glass blowers. So I might.
Your son sounds about 65.
Yeah. He's 11 years old, and I'm like, cool, yeah, go for it. Yeah. So watching TV and programs, it depends on what you're letting them watch.
Yeah. They do all get tarred with the same brush a little, I find. Well, TV as a genre.
But we were talking before we started recording, and your kids will have been watching TV at the ages of Rich and mine,
yep,
when they didn't have, YouTube wasn't a thing, and tablets and access to
all the things that we have,
what was an issue. And that will be the world that Rich and I's kids.
And how you put that limitation on those things, that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, or not even the limitation. It's, you know, there's a rabbit warren, which is the internet.
Yeah.
And once they're connected,
yeah,
that's it. You can, goodness knows where it's going to take.
There's all sorts of studies, isn't there, about recommended, you know, the recommended channel on YouTube, and where if you just click on enough things, God knows where you end up.
And that's
the thing about how you parent that, because you don't want to be... You don't want to be over policing your kids, and you want to give them some freedom of choice. But how do you
give yourself? I think you must have to, as a parent, give yourself as much knowledge about what's out there as possible.
Yeah, you have to literally
bury your head in the sand.
Yeah, that's it. You have to investigate yourself and make some sort of judgment as a parent as to what they can and can't watch. And it starts out with watching it with them a little bit. Start on the easy things, and then. I'm lucky, I think, because of the way I've introduced my kids to YouTube, they'll sometimes come to me and say, oh, am I allowed to watch this? Mm. And it's about starting that conversation with your children so that they know that there's things that you don't want them to watch.
Have there been things where they've come to you, you know, completely innocently and you've thought, oh my God, please don't press play on that?
There's none that I've had said, don't press play on that. Earlier this year, there was the big thing that everyone was scared about? There was a guy flashing up on the thing.
Oh, Momo, is it?
Momo, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, and the thing that people had supposedly edited in this horribly graphic image into some of the pig clips, for instance, online.
Yeah, there was this Momo guy that will pop up and supposedly was asking kids to do silly things horrific things.
Yeah.
Now, I bumped into it. I think there was more talk on television and in programs than it was actually happening online. And that was giving it a sort of platform.
It was a moral panic.
Yeah, it was a moral panic that gave
panic in the media.
It gave the issue like a platform. It raised its profile.
Oxygen and publicity and all that.
Exactly. And I, because it was going on, I was like, hold on. So I went and asked my kids, have you bumped into this? Do you know about it? My son didn't know about it. My daughter had spoken about it at school.
Right.
None of them had bumped into it online on YouTube, and they watch enough YouTube that they'll bump into something at some point. So no, they hadn't experienced any of it. But then I went, looked on YouTube, found it, and then found something that I could show them and say, look, if you ever see this...
Yeah. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it, for one. My daughter didn't want to watch it anyway. My son, you know how boys are. They're curious. Yeah. Let's check this out. Yeah. but, you know, we had a discussion about it, and we spoke about the reasons for not watching it. Yeah. And I think that having that conversation changes the whole way it happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Changes everything about
communication is the key, isn't it?
Yeah, always. Relationship with your kids. It's so much of it seems to boil down to that, as Richard and I discover as we go through this journey. That, you know, if you can talk to your kids about stuff and they can talk to you about it, then you're making right moves.
It's the biggest piece of advice I would say for any parent is that line of communication, that conversation, so that you know what's going on in their head, so they know what's going on in your head, so that you can move forward and grow.
But then have you got that thing in your mind? I'm just thinking about the age your kids are.
Yeah.
So you've got kids who aren't that far from the teenage years.
Yep.
So obviously that feels like a million miles in the future for Steve and myself.
It's going to blink in about 2 days.
Blinking, it will be there. But clearly, you know, it's one thing, and I say this as kids in my family. You know, it's one thing talking to an 11-year-old. Yeah. It's perhaps an entirely different thing talking to a 14-year-old. Yeah. And keeping that line of communication open. Because obviously every teenager, that's the nature of being a teenager, right? You're going to have some pushback at some point on that.
Yeah, I think it's the continuity of the conversation that's going to help out with that. Mm. So it's through the transition, not losing that communication.
Yeah. There was a big study, I think in the Sunday Times, reported in the Sunday Times a couple of weeks ago about dads and teenage daughters.
Yeah.
And there's a departure between the relationship that dads have with their teenage daughter when they hit puberty. That
I think I'm getting there.
Girls' bodies start to change. They feel embarrassed in front of their dads. They can't, they're going through, you know, periods and stuff like that.
You know, they want to talk to their mum about certain things. I talk to daddy about
it. A lot of dads just go, okay, well, I'm going to give you space. And it's the worst thing.
That's the wrong thing to do.
It's the worst thing you can do, apparently, because then they just go, you just part company.
Yeah.
And I can see that. The best thing to do is
you meet again when she's 19, you know.
When you've got her boyfriend in a headlock talking about, like, I'm going to snap his neck.
Yeah. The man that takes your place is the worst person you could possibly want to take your place.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's better just to have it out in the open and just talk about it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Definitely. Definitely. I think it's all about keeping that line of conversation all the way through, from when they're 6 months all the way through to, you know, married and left home.
Yeah. Iris, if you listen to this in a few years' time, we're keeping this conversation going, all right?
Daddy loves you.
Yeah, you always say that, don't we?
Yeah, Daddy does love you. We're not doing this podcast because we hate you. We love our children, just to clarify. I mean, I have two boys, and I've got to be honest, there's a part of me kind of with that. Oh, right. Like when we had Freddie, who's my youngest, I'd kind of had it in my head that maybe we'd have a girl. We'd have one boy and one girl, like Steve does. And then we had the second boy, and then you kind of get to that thing, well, we might only have two. And if so, does that mean I'm never going to have a girl? And so on the one hand, I'm kind of thinking, oh, right, I'd never be father of the bride. I'd never, you know, get to go through all those things you do with a daughter. On the other hand, the conversation you two are just having about your respective daughters, I sometimes sit there thinking, I might not have to do any of this. That's probably no bad thing.
I'm pretty sure that boys present
their own challenges.
Present their
Who's
own
the
challenges.
Who's the alpha male in the house?
My boy is 2 years old, and we're already having a battle over who's the alpha male in the house, and he's 2. So there God knows what he's going to be like when he's 14. You know,
is that... There's, oh, the police are knocking at the door. What's this about? Yeah. You did what?
Yeah, exactly.
All of those things. For your kids, how old were they, let's say, when they were aware that daddy was on TV? Have they ever had that thing where people at school are like, was that your dad on TV?
Yeah, they get it. It's quite normal to them now, having me on TV, because it's happened since they were toddlers. Mm. So I think I remember my son at around 3 to 6 months looking at TV and then going, looking at me and going,
doing a double take.
Hold on. But that seemed normal to them. It's like our kids now that look at our phone and there's a picture of you and they're smiling at cameras to cheese. And so for him, me being on TV was a bit like that. It was just always normal.
Yeah.
It wasn't until maybe going to school or being around friends where he might say, yeah, my dad's on the TV. And they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, isn't everyone's dad on the TV?
Yeah.
And it's like,
I remember Freddie Flintoff on the podcast some time ago. And we were asking him about, you know, we talked to everyone about kind of being a dad and all the rest of it. And I did ask him about what it's like for his kids with their dad being so famous, you know, particularly when his kids were little, their dad was really famous, you know, off the back of the 2005 Ashes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he was saying, well, for them, it was just normal because they didn't know any different, right? So it's just like, that's daddy's job. It's like, you know, there's no...
It's just the way it is.
I guess it's more difficult, other people's reaction in a public place.
Yeah.
If you're super, super, super famous.
Yeah.
And you're out with your kids and you're just going up and down Tesco's.
And then somebody comes up to you.
So people react.
Yeah. When they get it. That's when they're like, oh, can I have a picture of you? Oh, we love your program. And when your child is with you and that happens, that's when they go, oh.
How do you deal with it? Does that present a...
It doesn't present a problem.
Challenge or anything?
It's not a challenge or a problem. It's quite nice. Mm. I think they get proud.
Yeah.
When they see it happen, they start to get proud of it. And then they talk about it in a different way.
Have you ever been in an environment where perhaps been struggling with the discipline aspect of your children.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see other parents looking and gets that guy for TV. He's
struggling.
You're supposed to be an expert.
Just like us.
I have to say, I'm really lucky with my kids. They're so active. My son, like I said, he's a gymnast. He's a national level gymnast. So he trains 20 something hours a week after school.
Blimey.
And my daughter does singing and dance. So she just got into a West End show. So she's nine years old. She's
are doing well then.
Yeah. So they're quite socially, I'm not going to say advanced. They're just aware.
Yeah.
Very socially aware.
Okay.
So they're not the kind of kids that want to kick up in front of someone. They'll wait till they get home and then psychologically get you.
Yeah.
If it's in public,
they
get embarrassed about me talking too loud in public or having silly games or playing. Yeah. You know, if I'm in public and I start singing a song or something that's on the radio and they're like, no, people can hear you, people can hear you. Dad, Dad, you're so embarrassed. They're at that stage.
Got you.
So for them, they're not as open being public. So they're not going to kick up in public. They'll wait till they get home. It's a strange one. I don't know how I created that, but they don't want to act up in public or anything like that. Because as soon as eyes are on them, they're like, oh no.
You had a question, didn't you, about Rich, about Justin Fletcher?
Oh yeah, what's Mr. Tumble like?
Oh, Justin.
Yeah.
He's cool. I'm actually going to be working with... Oh, what? When's this? When are people going to hear this? I'm going to be working with him in a few days, which might be...
Yeah, so you may have already done some work with him.
Before this comes out. But we're doing the CBeebies proms at the Albert Hall. So, but then I've worked with him at BAFTAs before. He's the legend.
Is the thing, right? He's one of these people that if you don't have children... The vast majority of people won't even know who Mr. Tumble is. If you have toddlers in your house, he's like David Beckham. It's nuts. Yeah, Mr. Tumble.
Yeah, exactly. I've been to a festival, and he did a live set on stage, and it was absolutely ram.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like, you know, Kasabian.
Yeah, we're doing the BBC Summer Social in August.
Yeah, it's in Liverpool, right?
Yeah, Liverpool. And he's going to be there, and it's going to be like Glastonbury. It's going to be like, Mr. Tumble.
Does Mr. Tumble ever come out of character? I have this idea that he's like, you know, the De Niro of the children's TV world, that he's just constantly Mr. Tumble.
Just gets back into a limo when the door's shut. It's like champagne.
he'll have a drink, but it's just an extension of him.
Okay,
I feel.
Okay,
what you're seeing. It's just like a playful version of Justin.
He's not Krusty the Clown.
No, you're right. You're all good. You're all good. You're safe.
Nice. That seems like a suitable note on which to round up. I'm aware we've almost come to time. Nigel, that's been absolutely fascinating. I feel like I've actually genuinely learned. That's always when I know we've recorded a good podcast, when I walk away feeling like I've learned something.
Yeah, I feel more relaxed.
I feel reassured.
Screen.
Yeah, the thing is, like I said, I mean, it's... There's loads of stuff out there for kids to actually learn from. Mm. So shunning your kids away from screen time and away from and TV is kind of shunning them away from certain educational things as well.
You could say that.
I've noticed actually, because though my son doesn't watch TV, he's just started to get into, you know, wanting the magazines that the CBeebies magazine, so like Andy and the Dinosaurs magazine, that kind of stuff. And I can see actually there's potentially some educational benefit
definitely
from him, even though he doesn't watch the shows. So I'm sort of not softening my stance, not that I've got a particularly strong stance, but I'm less worried about it. And I can see that as he gets older and starts going on play dates around other people's houses where I don't have control of the remote control, I'm going to be less worried about it. I'm still not. Yeah. I'm not going to go home tonight and go, right, here's Pandora's box.
It's three hours.
But then the other side of that is that he's going to go to school and kids are going to be talking about stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, don't worry, your kids aren't at this level yet, but my kid's going to school and it's like one of their mates is allowed to watch Love Island. And I'm like, what? Hold the phone. You ain't allowed to watch. No. I don't care if he watches Love Island. Yeah. I don't care if he sits there.
Would you jump off? If he jumped off a cliff, would you jump off it too? That was my mum's old one.
All of the ones, all of them get said. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, Jackson plays with Avengers toys.
But
he's got no concept of the fact that they're films.
He'll
ask questions about Spider-Man, he'll ask questions about Hulk, and Hulk's actually become quite a good character to talk about his anger with.
The rage.
Hulk gets angry, but that doesn't make him a baddie. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's very true, Jackson. Correct.
I don't know if your son will ever be able to avoid Avengers. There are 22 films now.
Yeah, no, I don't think he will. But there's those, there are kids' books which explain the story behind Batman and Spider-Man in like big letters, very simple language.
Yeah, which I didn't
gives
know
you
that.
Good, yeah, which gives oh, you nice, good, right. origin stories, that kind of stuff, which he really enjoys. So he hears about, you know, how Bruce Wayne becomes Batman and why, and it's you know, it's good.
Oh, I look forward to getting Ben onto those. I've already got Ben onto Toy Story.
Toy Story is amazing. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. We were watching, okay, so Endgame was the, what was the one before Endgame? Infinity War.
Yeah. Thank you, yes.
So we were watching Infinity War. I took my son to like a multimedia screening a week before it came out and stuff. He cried. There's emotional content in these films that, like, you know, he was in bits.
Yeah. Well, I want to show him like the original Superman film.
I did that.
Because that's
I have to high five you on that. That is one of my top five films of like all time. Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
1978. Yeah.
I was obsessed. My mum still talks about. I think I watched it. So this is the early 80s. I must have been apparently I was 3 or 4 years old, and they showed me Superman around at my aunt and uncle's house. And my mum was genuinely worried to leave me in the bedroom at the end of the night because she was convinced I was going to fly out the window. Apparently my arm was like fixed in the Superman flying position with a fist. And she was like, she honestly thought, so they had to lock the window because they thought I might actually try and fly out the window.
See, Jackson listens to the music in the car because obviously John Williams quite, very emotive and explain what's going on. And he puts his fist out as if he's flying, and he's never seen Superman. He doesn't know
that's amazing.
It's just the way that
the music tells the story.
Yeah. Right. And through films, just on a tangent, through films, I've introduced both my kids to music scores, and now my son's a huge fan of Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
like can't wait till Hans comes again to, because I took my dad to see Hans Zimmer. He did a live concert at Wembley, and he loves some of that film music. And through that, he watched Interstellar. He's
that's
11 years old.
That's deep.
Loves it. One of his favourite films.
Nice.
Great. Cool. Well, we should probably round up. What I would say, aside from just thanking Nigel for a very, very interesting podcast, we haven't for a while asked people to review us. And if you're still listening after, 36 minutes, then you obviously love the podcast. So please, on your podcast app, on iTunes, just do leave us a review and a rating and tell people how wonderful we are. Because it does help.
Boosts us up the ratings.
Yeah, and share the love. Tell people.
Reminds our boss that it's worth us doing.
Which is always good.
Definitely. And encourages other guests to come on.
Indeed. And get people of the quality of Mr. Clark here.
I also speak to the dads out there? If you are out there listening to this podcast, maybe go and check my blog out. There's some stuff that's going to be going up for dads. It's called the Dadvengers podcast. Blog. There's more stuff for dads out there as well.
Absolutely. Plenty of resource. More the merrier in this space.
Catch you next time.
Right. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.